The following program contains scenes and language of a frank and explicit nature. Viewer discretion is advised.
It's not going to be an orgy. It's a toga party.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Jitsu, the podcast that wields films like deadly weapons. We are your hosts. I am John.
And I am Mike.
And this week, Mike, dear Lord, you made me watch Caligula.
You bet I did.
A movie produced by Penthouse and partially directed by Bob Guccione himself.
That's right. The Sultan of Smut.
Starring a very young Malcolm McDowell, a not-so-young Peter O'Toole, and a very young Helen Mirren.
Also starring just about everybody else in the universe. This movie had about 2,500 people work on it by the time all was said and done, between extras and carpenters and artisans and caterers. About 2,500 people worked on this movie, so pretty much anyone you can think of in Hollywood probably helped out with Caligula somewhere.
Helping out is a very interesting way of putting it. Why don't we go ahead and roll the trailer before we get into this plethora of perversion.
They spoke of it first in whispers. Then it took the media by storm.
Password.
Scrooge.
So be it.
Bob Guccione and Penthouse Films International present Caligula.
If only all Rome had just one neck.
Treachery could equal his evil. No evil was more treacherous. The recreation of power gone mad in all its insane dimension. Caligula.
Take my horse to his own bed.
The emperor who devoured Rome. Lust for Lust, a film that tells the truth as no film ever dared.
Crawl! Crawl! I hate them!
Malcolm McDowell, Teresa Ann Savoy, Helen Mirren, Peter O'Toole, John Gielgud, in the most controversial film ever made. Caligula. No rumor can match the reality.
Well, John, I hope that the trailer was even thoroughly disgusting. I gave you this movie because I was thinking back to some of our earlier episodes. And really, at that time, you and I, we were a new podcast and we were overzealous and we really were swinging for the fence each and every week. And I think that was a good thing. In recent weeks, we've been kind of taking it easy on each other. Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, Cutthroat Island, bad movies. Bad movies that I would prefer not to watch, but not movies so bad that I really definitively do not want to have to see them. Caligula is that kind of movie. This is the worst thing we've done since Pink Flamingos, another movie you had to watch, by the way. So I decided, let's go old school here on Film Jitsu, and I'm going to make you watch the closest thing to porn that I felt like we could cover on an episode of Film Jitsu. I'm proud to have picked it.
Of course you are. You also were very proud of Pink Flamingos, and you were all too satisfied with yourself at the end of the last episode when you revealed this to me.
I've been kind of giggling to myself for 2 weeks now about the fact that you had to watch this movie.
I don't even know where to start with this. I mean, Caligula is a fucked up character to begin with. This is the Roman emperor who, because his crazy nursemaid had convinced him that he was a god, by the age of 12 could have boasted to have killed his father and slept with all of his sisters.
Which, in case anybody is wondering, is all kinds of disgusting.
And this film opens with Malcolm McDowell as Caligula just going to town on this character's titties, and then you find out that it's his sister. Like, that's how the movie opens. Malcolm McDowell taking a mouthful of this chick's titties.
Oh, it's so wrong. I love that you had to watch it. Now, let's be clear, John. There's a lot of versions of this floating around.
Yes.
In fact, I was very specific in that you were not allowed to watch the version that's available for instant view on Netflix, because that's not the same version that they have available on DVD.
No, I think the instant view version is the, like, super edited, like, R-rated, 102-minute type of movie. No, I watched the unrated 156-minute movie.
Now, most notably, this film was made by Bob Guccione of Penthouse, and unbeknownst to the principal cast, he was filming hardcore sex scenes during the off hours, basically, that were edited into the film later. Did you watch a version that had actual hardcore sex scenes?
Yes.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. Really?
It was porn.
Like P and the G?
Yes, like P and the G, straight up blowjobs, a scene in which it's got to be a stunt double, but
I have no idea what you're going to say next.
Helen Mirren's character getting freaky with another chick in a scene that shows some very vivid cunnilingus.
It's grossing me. This is like hearing your dad talk about sex. Like, listening to you say all this stuff is just grossing me right out.
It's a disturbing film. Now, the funny thing is you say, you know, Malcolm McDowell and the principal cast didn't know that Guccione was filming these other scenes, and you can tell there's a definite break where all of a sudden it goes straight up porn. It's almost as if somebody spliced a Caligula porn with, like, a Caligula biopic and just sort of cut the two of them together.
Well, that is really kind of what happened.
Yeah. Yet the most uncomfortable scene in the entire movie, Malcolm McDowell is in.
Really, it's that beginning?
No, that's not that's tame by comparison to the rest of this movie.
Is there a plot?
Sort of. You're following the life of Caligula. So you get Caligula right before he becomes emperor. Tiberius is his uncle, who is currently the emperor, played by Peter O'Toole. He's wasting away. He's ancient at this point. He knows he's dying. He knows Rome as a republic is falling apart. And he also knows that Caligula is, he keeps calling him a serpent or a reptile, and he knows what this person really is, how fucked up Caligula really is, and he knows what's going to happen as soon as he takes over Rome. Shit's just going to hell in a handbasket. So you see him die, pass on the torch, so to speak, to Caligula, and then Caligula have this reign of just debauchery throughout Rome, and really ultimately lead to sort of the end of the emperors at that point. I mean, Claudius takes over after and yada yada yada, but it really was the beginning of Rome really moving away from that.
Did you just yada 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 the fall of Rome?
Yes.
That's impressive.
Because we're talking about the porn here.
All right, yeah, let's get back to the porn.
So, really quickly, just to kind of give some background on the movie and just the craziness that happened. Tinto Brass was the original director. He's an Italian porn director, and he was brought in to direct the film. Budgets started going crazy. Bob Guccione had problems with the fact that Tinto was casting what he believed were more accurate portrayals of ancient Romans and what Bob Guccione basically called fat, ugly Italian women. He wanted penthouse pets in the movie. Tinto was like, that's not accurate. So there was this big falling out. They fire him about halfway through the movie, do a cut of the movie that they're not comfortable with, reshoot a whole bunch of shit, and shove it in, so to speak.
To use some colorful terminology.
So that's how this movie gets made. Now, yes, there's a lot of graphic sex. There is tits and ass and P and VG all over the place.
Stop it. I can't take anymore. You gotta stop saying this stuff. Oh.
But the most uncomfortable scene in the entire movie, like I said, is Malcolm McDowell. So Caligula becomes emperor and decides he can do whatever the shit he wants because he's a god. And to prove this at one point, he decides he's jealous of one of his head soldiers who has just married this beautiful woman. So he crashes their wedding, takes them both back into the kitchen, asks whether or not the wife is a virgin, and then makes the husband watch him deflower her, shall we say, and then turns to the husband, asks him if he's a virgin, takes a fistful of butter.
What?
And I think we know where that goes.
What? The back of a Volkswagen?
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Now, fortunately, that scene pans out and you see the horribly uncomfortable face of the soldier rather than what's actually happening. But you know what happens.
Oh, he fixes the cable. Wow.
Exactly.
Well, is this critiquable?
I don't even know. Okay, so let's just put aside all of the crazy sex scenes. Malcolm McDowell is just strange through the whole thing. I'm not sure what he was going for with the Caligula character, because, you know, Caligula's slowly going insane. He starts off a bit tapped, and then historically he had syphilis, which ate away at his brainstem, which made him even more crazy.
You don't say.
Like you do. And I think there are some scenes where he captures that, and then other scenes where he looks like a deer caught in the headlights. And it's very uneven, the whole performance.
Do you think that's because of all the cut and paste editing and inserting different things and all that? Just the insanity of putting this film together?
Yeah.
Do you think it was uneven because of the editing process?
More than likely. And I also think that some of it is, I mean, you switch directors midway through. There were essentially three people involved in directing this at one point or another. And clearly somebody was getting some good performances out of him, and other people weren't. There's a scene towards the end where Caligula is just completely fucking tapped. He marches his army up to Britain and decides that he's going to wage war and conquer Britain and wage war against Neptune and all this craziness. And he decides that to prove to the people of Rome that he has conquered Britain, which is just a swath of land with nobody there at the time, he gathers up all of these reeds from this pond and says, "This is my victory." And he goes back to Rome and just, like, displays these reeds to people. He's like, "Look, I conquered England. Here are the reeds from England." And you're like, "What?"
Kyria.
Caesar?
Are we prepared for the invasion?
Yes, Caesar. Only, where is Britain?
Where? There!
Oh, yes, Lord, there. But, there is no enemy.
There is Papyrus Cane.
Papyrus Cane, Divine Caesar?
Yes, Papyrus! Don't be so stupid, Kyria. Order my army to attack and destroy that papyrus.
Yes, Lord.
After all, we must have some proof that I conquered Britain.
But Malcolm McDowell just has that, like, crazy look in his eye the whole time.
Is that like the Roman version of a giant mission accomplished banner?
Yeah, pretty much, yes. And that scene, he looks like a crazy person. He's got the look in his eye. He's got the, I don't know what's going on in that head right now. Look. Mm-hmm. But there are other scenes where he just totally looks out of it, and I think some of it may have very well have been the direction, but also, I don't know how comfortable he was with the amount of crazy, sexy stuff happening when clearly he was around. Because he was around for some of it. There are scenes where there is no doubt what's going on. He is standing there, and there is oddity happening around him. And I wonder if some of that was also there where he was just kind of like, all right, this is a little weird for me.
Now, in these scenes, though, is it clear that there's actually, like, coitus going on over there, or is this just very convincing movie sex scenes? Do you think he was there during the actual sex?
There are a few scenes where he was clearly involved in what was going on, that there was, and I'm thinking of one particular scene towards the beginning where he and Peter O'Toole are trying to have a conversation, but basically everyone around them is masturbating.
Good Lord.
And clearly, clearly masturbating.
Not any sort of concealed masturbation.
No.
Not any vague masturbation.
No, no pantomiming, none of that. It was some straight up self-love going on.
Right in front of the king?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, this is Tiberius's court where he's got this combination of people pleasuring themselves and then circus freaks.
Oh, well, I mean,
yeah,
what's sexier than circus freaks?
Yeah, you know, people with weird hands and some guys on stilts, like you do.
You can't say weird hands when you're talking about a room full of chronic masturbators. That's, what are you doing? There's nobody listening anymore.
They've all left.
Everybody has shut this episode off.
I don't know that I could have a conversation with Peter O'Toole with all of that going on around me. You got to be distracted.
Yeah, I would think. I would think it is hard to focus on a conversation at a time like that.
Somehow Peter O'Toole does it, though. He is Tiberius the whole... And granted, he's not there long. It is a shortened time period for him. You meet him in the beginning where he's in his pool, and he has all these slaves around him who he keeps calling his little fishies. And he's batshit crazy the whole time. And he's maybe around for 20 minutes or so of the movie. But he is aged, decrepit, crazy-ass Tiberius the whole time. Like, he is on point. I got to give him credit for that. You know, it's impressive, especially since other actors are clearly thrown by some of that.
Now, I've heard that this film is made with the same kind of decadence that perhaps Caligula may have enjoyed. I mean, thousands and thousands of costumes, handcrafted sandals and swords. Apparently, they had to make thousands of wigs out of real human hair.
Oh, wow.
I mean, my understanding is this is quite an ornate set.
It absolutely is ornate. Everything about it, they went all out. And you can tell it doesn't feel, in most cases, like a set. It actually does feel a bit like you're in sort of a Roman, I guess, I don't know, what do they call them? King, castle? I don't know what they...
Temple?
Temple, wherever the Caesar lives. You've just got these huge beds with all these plush pillows on them, which are clearly embroidered. Everyone is wearing these flowing garments that look perfectly put together. There's some really cool costumes in this movie when people have clothing on. So it doesn't surprise me that they put a lot of hand craftsmanship into it. I don't think you had to spend that level of money. I think you could have probably backed off a bit and still had a similar effect. There's a certain point where on camera it stops translating, I think.
Okay.
But it does look great, and there's just some fantastic... It's 1979, so they had to do a lot more with actual set pieces, and they're not green screening this shit. So when Caligula builds this giant boat in the middle of his castle or whatever we're calling that, and loads it up with all of the wives of the senators and turns it into an orgy, it is a giant fucking boat. Like, they built that. And it's not surprising to me when I heard that it is the largest prop ever built for a film.
Well, that seems like a very Caligula thing to do, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is a massive barge, like warship, in the middle of his house, essentially.
All right. This guy's like the Roman Puff Daddy.
He really is. And they do capture that. I think I would like to actually at some point see, I don't know if I can sit through it again, but it would be interesting to compare the unrated, really, crazy version with all the porn to the original cut or the R-rated cut or, whatever order things got cut in. Because I think there is a cool story that could be told. And I think they started going in that direction. They had some of the pieces with the ornate sets and all of that. That if they could have pulled together those performances a little bit more instead of focusing on all of the other aspects of things and trying to be so over the top with the perversion, I think you could get a really cool film that I don't think you could make today. I really don't.
Certainly not with a major deal. I mean, you could,
no.
This would have to be produced by Penthouse and released under a Penthouse banner. I don't think you could get a studio to do this kind of film.
No, you definitely couldn't. And I think without that studio backing and without some of those bigger name actors, I think you get a porn parody. I think this was sort of the time frame in which this movie could be made, and I think they messed it up in some ways. And again, maybe the R-rated version is a little bit closer to what I think this could have been and could have achieved, but I think they missed the boat by trying to be too over the top with the porn.
Well, John, I think you are absolutely a champion for suffering through this movie. I really have to do something I don't often do on this show, which is give you my highest praise. Because I'm really impressed that you warriored through this entire movie. I guess to close things out, I have to ask. You watched Caligula. You watched Pink Flamingos with that infamous dog shit scene at the end. Which one of these movies is worse?
It's definitely Pink Flamingos.
Really?
Yeah. There's nothing grosser, first of all, than actually eating dog shit. So, for biggest gross out scene, it definitely takes the cake, even though Malcolm McDowell fisting someone is a bit much.
Just a bit.
Just a bit. But I think in Caligula, I think you tune out some of the sexuality because there is more of a story there. Whereas Pink Flamingos, I still don't know what it's about.
I don't think John Waters knows what it's about either.
So you could fall into the story a little bit more and start to zone out. It's sort of like Showgirls. You start to zone out some of the naked.
Okay.
You know, so I definitely think there is a movie somewhere in Caligula. Whereas I'm not sure you can say the same thing about Pink Flamingos. I think it's more of an experience than a movie.
Well, for the two listeners who are still with us, we'd like to thank you for hanging on for John's review of Caligula. And John, once again, I have to give you a slow standing clap for your bravery. You have done us proud this week on Film Jitsu.
It wasn't easy, but I made it work.
I had my foot on the gas as I left the road and blew out my mind. 8 miles out of Memphis and I got no spare. 8 miles straight up downtown somewhere. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in. I said I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
John, it seems only fitting that if we're discussing Caligula, we would have to do a bottom five list about perversions. It seems as though I was correct in assuming that Caligula is about nothing if it's not about perversion. And so this week's bottom five is our bottom five film perversions. What do you got for us?
This is an interesting list. I don't know. I think stepping back from the movie and now looking at it again, I feel a little bit better about it, but coming off of Caligula and originally making this list, it was hard to take any of these seriously given what I'm presented
right,
with.
Right, yep. Now, I don't know about you, but I avoided any inclusions of Pink Flamingos or The Human Centipede, which are two movies we discussed on this show, and it seemed, at least to me, off limits.
Yeah, we don't really have any hard and fast rules about what isn't includable in a bottom five. We play a little fast and loose with that, but I think that's kind of a taboo, shall we say.
Sure. Yeah, if we've done a whole episode on it, it's not really fair game anymore.
Yeah. So my number five, I keep going back to this. I like to do the jokey pick, the one that comes to me and I kind of get a chuckle out of it. And so I like to include it as my number five. I'm going with Shannon Hamilton, played by Ben Affleck in Mallrats.
Very good. There you go.
We did mention it because he likes having sex in a very uncomfortable place.
Like the back of a Volkswagen.
Hey, see, Bruce, I like to pick up girls on the rebound from a disappointing relationship. They're more vulnerable. They're much more in need of solace. And they're fairly open to suggestion. And I use that to fuck them someplace fairly uncomfortable.
Well, like the back of a Volkswagen.
Good call. See, now there we go. We were just one episode ago talking about the believability of Ben Affleck as an actor in anything.
Yeah, and in this movie, I absolutely believe that he wants to do Shannon Doherty in her poop shoot.
Oh, come on. You did not. All right. This is the last episode of this podcast ever. Well, for my number five, I decided to take a page out of your book and go with something lighthearted.
Okay.
The rest of my list is some twisted shit. Not Caligula twisted, but still pretty good. Like, my list is kind of R. Kelly perverted. So I'm sure you're wondering, how can a perversion be lighthearted? Well, for my number five, I think it's best if we just roll a clip.
When I was a little kid, I kind of had this problem. And it's not even that big of a deal. Something like 8% of kids do it, but whatever. It's, for some reason, I don't know why, just kind of sit around all day and draw pictures of dicks.
What?
Draw pictures of dicks.
Dicks? Like a man dick?
Yeah, like a man dick. I just sit there for hours on end drawing dicks. I don't know what it was. I couldn't touch the pen to a piece of paper without it drawing the shape of a penis.
That's fucked.
No shit, it's really fucked up. Here I am, this little kid, and I can't stop drawing dicks to save my own life. It's one of the cunts where
assim. Agora vou te pedir, agora vou começar. Quero ver quem dá pra mim.
All right, I mean, I don't see what this has to do with Becca.
Just listen, okay? Your precious little Becca sat next to me for all of fourth grade. And in the classroom is where I did the majority of my illustrations. I was very secretive about this whole dick operation I had going on. Even I thought I was fucking crazy. Imagine what everyone else would think. So I would stash all of my dick drawings in this Ghostbusters lunchbox that I had. So one day, I'm finishing up this real big, veiny, triumphant bastard. All of a sudden...
Pussy!
You hit Becca's foot with your dick?
Yeah. I know. She starts crying, she flips out. And she rats me out to the principal. He finds his Ghostbusters lunchbox dick treasure chest, and he fucking flips out. He calls in my parents. Turns out this principal is some sort of religious fanatic, and he thinks I'm possessed by some sort of dick devil. My parents make me go see some therapist, and he's asking me all these dick questions. They literally made me stop eating foods that were shaped like dicks. No hot dogs, no popsicles. You know how many foods are shaped like dicks? The best kinds.
Yeah. Well, that's really messed up.
That's right. Seth's compulsive dick drawing in Superbad. This is a very visual scene because of all the dick drawings. They really are funny. Like, there's one that's kind of a Dr. Strangelove with a giant wiener riding a missile with a cowboy hat. You and I saw Superbad together in the theater, and this scene probably got the biggest laughs out of the whole movie. But let's be honest, funny or not, compulsive dick drawing is pretty pervy behavior.
All right, well, I'm going to follow up with number four, which is also a bit tongue-in-cheek as well, before the rest of my list just goes off the rails. But I'm going with the movie I know you're a big fan of, Richie and Margot Tannenbaum.
Oh.
In The Royal Tannenbaums.
Yeah, I'm not actually so much a big fan of this movie, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, I know that surprises a lot of people. I am in the minority. I don't really care for this movie the way that a lot of people do. I like it, but I'm just not over the moon about it the way that a lot of people are. It's good, but I wouldn't say this is one of my big favorites or anything, but I think I know where you're going here.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely people who, you know, sing the praises of this movie and go all out. I think it's a solid flick. And yeah, technically they're not related because it's an adopted thing, but, you know, raised brother and sister, yeah, that's kind of incest.
It's a little incesty.
Yeah, a little bit. The smooching, yeah, a little bit. And that's part of the joke, and so I went with that. I was like, all right. I just felt funky. I mean, that's incest, clearly a perversion that belongs in a bottom five, but I really didn't want to talk about it. So right. This was my way of getting around it.
Oh, yeah, and you did such a good job when you discussed Caligula. So, way to go. Mission accomplished again. Well, my number four is an entire movie. The whole thing is one big perversion. I'm going with the film Happiness, directed by Todd Solondz.
Oh, wow.
It stars Dylan Baker as a pedophile and Philip Seymour Hoffman as a lonely weirdo making sexually harassing phone calls. I really don't want to go into the dirty details of Happiness because, well, for one, I think we've had enough of that. And two, I think that I've earned enough trust from our listeners that they'll just go with me on this one. It's a totally fucked movie. It's really uncomfortable and upsetting to watch. It's also a very good film in its own dark way. And I mean dark.
Yeah.
Like, darker than a black steer's tuchus on a moonless prairie night. Kind of dark. To quote the Big Lebowski, if I may. It's an extremely controversial film. Sundance actually refused to include it in the festival, but it did well at Cannes in 1998. Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars and called it his number 5 film of 1998, beating out Shakespeare in Love, Elizabeth, and Life is Beautiful. I'm not sure if I can recommend it exactly. I'll just say proceed with caution.
Yes.
But it's my number 4, and really only because I'm being so vague about it. Otherwise, I think this film would be much further down the list. But the whole thing is pretty perverse. So, like I said, proceed with caution on Todd Solondz and Happiness.
Yeah, I think shit just got real on these lists.
Yep, they There you go.
Because I'm going to follow up with, if you've got a bottom five list and Cronenberg did something in that category, it probably belongs on the list. The man is fucked, and he gave us some really weird perversion in the movie Crash.
Ah!
This is a movie about a couple, played by James Spader and Deborah Unger, who are in pretty much a loveless marriage until they're in a car accident with Helen, played by Holly Hunter. And then the three of them somehow get involved with each other and begin to fetishize car accidents.
Right.
Which is just weird. They meet up with this guy, Vaughn, played by Elias Koteas, and then Rosanna Arquette shows up and plays this woman, Gabriel, who's got this weird, like, reconstructive brace. Everybody's turned on by all these car accidents. They're driving fast in cars. They're trying to get in accidents. And then everybody just starts doing each other. James Spader is doing Rosanna Arquette in this weird scar she has rather than actually doing her. She has a scar on her leg and he does that, which is weird. And then James Spader has sex with Elias Koteas, which is just off the wall. It's just, it's Cronenberg.
That man will do anything to the human body.
He's insane.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know, John, that you and I perhaps view perversion in the same way, because I think for me, the connection between sex and violence has a lot to do with the way that I define perversion.
Yes.
I think we'll definitely see that with my number one, but for my number three, I'm going with a really memorable character from Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof. Stuntman Mike.
Nice.
Which, we're not too far off of Crash here at all.
No.
Kurt Russell is awesome in this role, and his scenes at the bar are excellent. A lot of people were kind of turned off by this movie because it is almost two stories that, well, the first has almost nothing to do with the second other than to give us this Stuntman Mike character. No. But his scenes at the bar are excellent. It just turns out that he's a psychopath. And in order to get himself off, he uses his reinforced stunt car to cause violent accidents and kill beautiful young girls. He climaxes at the point of the collisions. That's pretty damn screwed up.
Yeah.
When killing people in a car crash is the only way you can get your cookies, you're a perverse fucking dude. I don't know what to tell you.
Wow. That's, yeah.
Yeah. It's strange that both of those movies ended up on my list, but it seems like we have a pretty clearly defined idea of what a perversion is.
Yeah, there's a line there. My number two is definitely another example of somebody crossing the line. I'm going with Humbert Humbert from Lolita.
Oh.
Of course, played by James Mason in the 62 Kubrick version. Later, played by Jeremy Irons in 1997. Basically, Humbert marries a widow in order to get closer to her teenage daughter.
Now, this is tricky, though, because this is based on a classic Russian novel.
Oh, yeah, Nabokov, Lolita. The thing is we're not talking, like, she looked 19 territory. We're talking, clearly, she is underage. She is, at most, 16, and that's what he likes about her. And, I mean, Nabokov's kind of a fucked dude anyway. You know, Laughter in the Dark is another book in which he deals with older dudes and young chicks. I mean, his stuff is a little out there, but...
That's what she said. It had to happen, didn't it?
It eventually was going
to
happen.
It's a Caligula episode. It had to happen.
I'm surprised we got this far in the episode, actually.
I know. I'm sorry.
But yeah, if you're going to talk perversions, I mean, Lolita's kind of, it's got to come up.
That's also what I said. Oh, man. Worst episode ever. And best. Well, my number two is from a movie, Like Happiness, that was released in 1998. That was also the same year as all the Monica Lewinsky trials, so I guess 98 was a pretty good year for perverts. I'm going to go with a movie. I'm not sure if I like it or not, actually. The jury's still out for me on this one, but it's Strangeland, starring Twisted Sister frontman Dee Snider. Snider wrote the script and starred as Captain Howdy, a psychopath who's really, really into body modification. The guy... pretty much he gets off on pain. He pierces himself with needles, that whole thing, you know, tattoos, all that. Listen, I'm fine with tattoos and piercings, but when you start filing your teeth down into fangs and suspending yourself from the ceiling with meat hooks in your chest, I'm calling you a freak.
Yeah.
John, you know I am a true New Hampshire, live free or die, do what you feel kind of guy. But even I have my limits. This guy has taken body modification all the way past attention-seeking, anti-authority daddy issues, and straight into torture and murder. He lures women through the internet, kidnaps them, and performs all kinds of messed up body modification on them, including sewing their mouths shut while they're still alive. This character may be the exact definition of perversion. The movie definitely plays off all the goth Marilyn Manson paranoia of the late 90s.
Yeah.
It actually came out just before Columbine, so I guess you can't really blame it on the whole trench coat mafia thing, but I think the whole goth scene was very well underway at that point. I certainly remember all those people in high school wearing makeup and black boots for no good reason, but I'm not sure if I'd call it a good movie or not, but it's definitely busting at the seams with perversion. And it's interesting to watch. I will give it that. Dee Snider is really actually very convincing as this character. And it's also chock full of Twisted Sister puns. It's got a cameo by Robert Englund from before Robert Englund was just making paychecks for being who he is.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Watch it if you want to. It's certainly a curiosity, but Captain Howdy is far and away one of the great movie perverts of all time.
Wow, yeah, that's... Whew.
Have you seen it?
I've only seen part of it, and I was like, what in the shit am I watching?
Oh, yeah. Yep, it's a little like that.
That's not a movie you can come into the middle of. Well, my number one, I kind of think it might also be your number one. I don't know, based on some of your comments earlier, but I'm going with the character George... probably more well known as Machine in 8mm.
Oh, not my number one, actually.
Okay. This is the sadistic star of the snuff film, who we find out admits to basically he's in the movies because he enjoys it. He wasn't looking for a paycheck. He didn't have an ulterior motive. He just liked being in snuff films.
John, you and I have a friend who is a good friend of the show, and relayed to me not too long ago that when he was in, I think, junior high school, he took a girl to see this movie, but his parents had to take them because they were too young to go to the movies.
Oh, no.
So, yep, he got his parents to take him and a girl to see a movie, and they ended up at 8mm. Can you imagine? Can you imagine going to see a Nicolas Cage movie about snuff films with a girl you were trying to impress? And your parents.
Man, that is making out to Schindler's List, isn't it?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Ooh, wow. I felt uncomfortable just watching this movie, never mind having my parents around.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fucked movie. Obviously, snuff films, like, it just goes over the top as far as I'm concerned. I don't think that people should be dying in my porn.
No, I'd prefer not.
Yeah, it's just one of my weird curiosities. And yeah, it had to be my number one. It's so fucked.
You know, the best part of killing someone, the look on their face. It's that look. Not when they're threatened. Not when you hurt them. Not even when they see the knife. But when they feel the knife go in, that's it. It's surprise. I just can't believe it's really happening to him. She had that look. The girl. But she knew it wasn't just porno.
Yeah, well, it's a good pick. My number one is certainly a more iconic character. I had to go. Actually, I think if we didn't include this character on this list, we would have had to just board up the podcast and move away. Dennis Hopper's staggeringly fucked up sociopath, Frank Booth, from David Lynch's classic Blue Velvet.
Oh, man.
This character is horrifying. He carries around a tank of amyl nitrate to huff. He carries around a tank of amyl nitrate that he huffs all the time, which puts him in apparently just the right state of insane euphoria for carrying out all his messed up sexual deviancy.
Oh, Lord.
He's kidnapped Isabella Rossellini's family and is forcing her to have sex with him or else he'll kill them.
Yeah.
He's always teetering between uncontrollable rage and pure ecstasy. It's really ultra super fucking weird. I actually considered Isabella Rossellini herself for this pick because in some weird way she seems to be getting off on all this masochism, but that's just kind of too messed up on a psychological level for me to even think about, so I think it's best not to get into the head of a David Lynch character whenever possible.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper is all too convincing as Frank. He's just so terrifyingly violent and sick that he had to be my number one. This was the first thing that popped into my head. So that's my pick, Frank Booth.
Wow. Well, normally we give the pitch to our listeners to let us know what their bottom five perversions are, but I'm kind of scared to do that.
No, come on. Come on, all you little creeps.
Well,
if you're listening to this podcast, we know you're all a bunch of weirdos to begin with. You must have some favorite film perversions.
So if you pervs want to write us, you can reach us at mikeandjohn@filmjitsu.com or on the message line 424-78-JITSU.
She's a very kinky girl, the kind you don't take home to mother. She will never let your spirits down once you get her off the street. Oh, girl. She likes the boys in the band. She says that I'm her all-time favorite. When I make my move to her room, it's the right time. She's never hard to please.
John, normally this is the part of the show where we might play a game, but I think after a discussion of incest and fetishizing car crashes and anything to do with Bob Guccione, it would seem in poor taste to play a game at this point in the show. I think the time for fun and games has passed. Don't you?
So now we're drawing the line.
I think so. Yeah, I think enough is enough at a certain point. Maybe it's not really fun and games anymore. Not once you've talked about incest. I think there's really nothing funny after that. So why don't we just move right into our staff picks?
I think that's a great idea. And in fact, I'm trying my staff pick. I came up with something that would just completely try to wipe the slate clean. I wanted to go in totally the opposite direction. So I'm going with a sort of zany comedy from 1991 starring Sally Field, Kevin Kline, Robert Downey Jr., Kathy Moriarty, Elizabeth Shue, and Whoopi Goldberg for an ensemble cast.
Wow.
I'm of course talking about Soap Dish.
Of course you're talking about Soap Dish.
Of course. This movie kills me, okay? It's a movie about a soap opera, which gets really interesting as you move in and out of these characters' lives and then the characters they're playing in the soap and those lives. Basically, Sally Field plays Celeste, don't remember her character in the soap's name. It's something crazy. But she's convinced that her rival, Montana, played by Kathy Moriarty, is trying to get Robert Downey Jr.'s character, who's the writer, to write her off the show. And so this starts this whole, basically within the movie, this sort of soap opera drama amongst all these characters, but they're also then producing a soap opera. And so you get this cool life imitating art, imitating life kind of play. The soap scenes where they're actually filming the show are so over-exaggerated soap opera cliche that it's just ridiculous. It's like the doctor operating on the woman is really her long-lost brother who married her cousin. Like, all that crazy shit that people make up when they're trying to make fun of soaps is in the soap.
A second opinion. This is Dr. Franz Blau of the Sex Change Clinic in Bethesda, Maryland.
Thank you. Dr. Randall, after extensive investigation, I've come to the conclusion that it's virtually impossible for you to have impregnated your nurse, Montana Moorhead, because before she came to our little clinic, she was Milton Moorhead of Syosset, Long Island. Hello. No! No!
Which allows the drama of the characters' lives outside of the TV show they're filming to just be a little bit kind of crazy and a little bit soap opery, but not over the top. It's a cool dynamic that is set up here, and I really enjoy it. It's just sort of one of those smart but goofy comedies, kind of a Fish Called Wanda kind of vein. Definitely not as dark as A Fish Called Wanda, but certainly that level of goofy comedy. One that I really enjoy and pull back out and watch every now and then. So from 1991, Soap Dish.
Well, there you go. I think it's a great idea to try and have something of a palate cleanser after this episode. And I did the same thing with my pick. For my staff pick this week, I think I threatened this movie a couple of episodes ago. I'm going with a film from 1995 starring a kid that nobody ever heard of again, and also George C. Scott, Angus.
Nice.
I love the movie Angus. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's because I could identify with a fat kid being kept down by the man. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe I did. But it's about Angus Bethune, who is basically the school pariah. Nobody notices him other than to take the time to pick on him. He's only got one friend who is a kid that's even weirder than he is. To make matters worse, he's madly in love with the most popular cheerleader in school, who's dating the star football player, played by a pre-Dawson's Creek James Vanderbeek.
Oh.
Kathy Bates plays Angus's mom. George C. Scott plays Angus's grandfather, who is kind of awesome as a grouchy old grandpa. The movie came out in 1995. It's almost a commercial for Green Day albums. The whole soundtrack is like Green Day, Green Day, Green Day. I just really enjoy the whole high school atmosphere of this movie. As you know, John, I really like movies that happen in high school. I don't know what it is about them. Dazed and Confused, Can't Hardly Wait,
yes.
Which is like a totally off-the-wall guilty pleasure of mine. I don't know what it is. I dig that kind of thing. You know, not to the extreme. I'm not stepping up or anything anytime soon. But I really enjoyed the performances here. This is just a movie that I think kind of captures what a lot of us remember as being something of an outcast. I actually had a great time in high school. Junior high was not so much fun for me. And I think maybe this movie kind of gets all of us in that place where we all kind of had an awkward time in childhood, and things do get better. And that's kind of what this movie is about, you know? Angus is just this weird outsider who finally has to come to terms with the fact that he's okay being who he is. Some of the performances are just really fun. It's just kind of dumb teen comedy. But I think after a discussion of Caligula, that's exactly the kind of thing I needed. So the reason I decided this week to make Angus my staff pick is that it is finally available on DVD and finally available on instant view on Netflix. So you can conveniently make your way over to Netflix and check out this movie right now. I went to a shrink to analyze my dreams. She says it's like a sex that's bringing me down. I went to a whore. He said my life's a bore. Joke with my wife and cuz it's bringing her down.
All right, Mike. It's the time of the episode where I reveal to you what you will be watching in our next episode. As we have discussed a number of times, there is a significant life change on the horizon for you.
There is.
And in fact, this next episode should probably roughly coincide with that.
Yes, I do suspect by the time our next episode is due out, my wife and I will have had our first child, which I am very excited about.
Absolutely. Well, I thought that we have to celebrate that. Obviously, it's a momentous occasion, and if we were going to celebrate it, we have to do it Film Jitsu style. You will be watching Super Babies.
Oh, shit.
Baby Geniuses 2.
Yes!
It's not
my God.
It's not Baby Geniuses 2 Super Babies. It's actually Super Babies Baby Geniuses 2.
Right, yeah. That's some excellent work right there, isn't it?
A little backwards, but, you know, why not? It'll be fun.
I can't believe we haven't watched this movie yet.
No, and I'm glad we haven't, because it is the perfect Film Jitsu movie to celebrate the birth of Film Jitsu's newest fan.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't this rated by IMDb one of the worst movies of all time?
Oh, yeah, it was number one for the longest time.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was only a matter of time. I mean, the work was done for us there. A database of movies found that this was one of the worst. Oh, no. I should have seen this coming.
So I imagine it will be somewhere on the level of Sylvester Stallone in a diaper.
Okay, great.
But to go along with that, it's not the most inventive of bottom fives, but since you're having a kid, we kind of have to do bottom five babies.
Okay. There we go. I mean, we did perversions. Why not follow that up with babies?
I mean, generally speaking, what was going on in Caligula often gets followed up by babies.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for tying those two things together in my brain. Appreciate it. Well, this is a great pick, and I'm really, really happy that you thought this through so hard, because our baby episode is going to be Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2.
Yes.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, hopefully all works out and the baby shows up on time and I still manage to watch this movie before she gets here. So hopefully we'll have an episode out in 2 weeks.
That'd be nice, yeah.
I will make every effort.
I think the listeners will give us a little bit of slack if the schedule gets a little messed up around that time, but we'll do our best to keep it on track.
Yeah, I think we can manage. I've already braced my wife for the fact that despite the baby coming into our lives, I still have some podcast responsibilities, and so far she's been pretty cool with that, so we'll see what happens, but I hope everybody will celebrate with me and bear with me as we'll see what happens here on our future episode. Well, this has been an absolutely appalling edition of Film Jitsu. We'd like to thank the now presumably one person still listening. Also, whoever you are out there, you should get help. But we hope that you will come back and join us next time for an absolutely different vibe here on Film Jitsu, as I will be reviewing Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2. As always, we have been your hosts. I am Mike.
And I am John.
We'll see you next time. Stalno mislim na te, hoću znat sve kate, vježbat ću sate i sate, karate, karate, vježbat ću dok zadnji mi kjaji, zastane
Later sate. Played by Jeremy Irons in the 97 version.
Man, you just Boston the fuck out of that.
Wow, did I? It's back like crazy lately.
I know, you were like, Jeremy Irons. It's like, you didn't even try the R.